John Parr. John wrote the second edition big book story, The Professor and the Paradox. He's from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. His story appears on page 336 in the second edition of the big book Alcoholics Anonymous. Says he, "We AAs surrender to win, we give away to keep, we suffer to get well, and we die to live." According to a talk John gave on Founders Day 1978 in Akron, he entered AA in February of 1949. He was born in Atlanta, Georgia, and he had a thick Southern accent. He described himself as having always been shy, sensitive, fearful, envious, and resentful, which in turn led him to be arrogantly independent, a defiant personality. He believed he got his Ph.D. degree principally because he wanted to either outdo or defy everybody else. He published a great deal of scholarly research, perhaps for the same reason. He finished graduate school at the age of 30 and taught English at the University of Alabama for 21 years. That is where he was working when he entered AA. He later taught at Kent State University in Ohio. He joked in a talk he gave in 1978 about teaching Shakespeare with a Southern accent and having taught freshman English to Jim Nabors, television's Gomer Pyle. Had he known Nabors was going to make so much money, he would have sat in Nabors' seat and let Nabors teach the class. He began as a social drinker in his early 20s and did not experience any problems with drinking until well after he finished graduate school. But as the tensions and anxieties of his life mounted and the setbacks from perfection began to increase, he slipped over the line between moderate drinking and alcoholism. John said there are all kinds of drunks, melancholy drunks, weeping drunks, traveling drunks, slap-happy and stupid drunks, and a number of other varieties. He was a self-aggrandizing and occasionally violent drunk. His crisis came when, during a drunk, he became violently insane and landed in the city jail. Soon after, he was ready for AA. John gave very humorous talks. For example, he said in his 1978 talk that he did not know why his story was removed from the third edition. Perhaps the New York office thought he had died. He also joked about how having your story in the big book could sometimes cause problems. He told how, after he had talked at a state AA convention in Little Rock, Arkansas, he overheard a man say that he was a fake, a liar, and a thief. The man thought he had stolen every word of his story out of a story in the big book, which the man had just read the night before. He discusses four paradoxes in his story. A paradox, he explains, is a statement seemingly self-contradictory, a statement which appears to be false, but which, upon careful examination, in certain instances, proves to be true. The four paradoxes are: number one, we surrender to win; number two, we give away to keep; number three, we suffer to get well; and number four, we die to live. John updated his story for the January 1968 AA Grapevine. In the update, he said that in AA, we don't just quit drinking. We learn to change our self-centeredness, to stop running away from things we don't like, and to remove or at least adjust our emotional shortcomings. We do these things by taking seriously and honestly our 12 steps, the nearest thing to a cure for alcoholism that anybody has yet discovered. We learn to do these things not by just memorizing the steps, though that is a good idea, but by attempting to live and act them each day of our lives. And eventually, often, when we least expect it, we discover that as a result of all this, we are happy and contented and full of thanksgiving. Something I once knew or thought I knew, I could never be without drinking. This next part of the reading comes from the 1967 AA Grapevine. Big Book Stories Updated 1 of 5. The Big Book of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, was first published in 1939. A revised edition was published in 1955. Now, 12 years later, the Grapevine begins an exciting new series of articles to appear every other month for as long as the articles hold out. Big Book Stories Updated. On page 336 of the Big Book, second edition, appears The Professor and the Paradox. Now the professor, from a vantage of another dozen years' sobriety, reflects on why he became alcoholic and why AA works for him. He titles it, Miraculous is the Word. I have tried hard not to be proud that my little narrative, The Professor and the Paradox, was included among the personal stories in the revised 1955 second edition of The Big Book. Whenever I get too puffed up about it, I usually remind myself of an appropriate AA story I have told on several occasions. It concerns a young Canadian priest who was serving his church in Northeast Canada, traveling about on snowshoes and dog sled, covering a territory about twice the size of Texas, and ministering to a total population of about 28 people. After 5 years of this, his headquarters in Montreal decided he needed a short rest, and he was accordingly called home for a mild celebration. At the welcome banquet given in his honor when he arrived in Montreal, the master of ceremonies, of course, praised the young priest highly and apparently overdid it. For later in the evening, when the banquet was over and the young priest had retired to his room, he was overheard saying his prayers. Here is what he was saying. Dear Lord, please keep me humble, because I am a very great man. There is at least one disadvantage in having one story in the Big Book. Most of us in AA have basically only one story, and that one in the Big Book is mine. As the evening speaker before and since the revised edition was published, I have delivered that speech more or less, word for word, to many groups in many places, particularly in my own and a few neighboring states. Once, after I had thus delivered it as part of a program at an AA state convention out west, where I was virtually unknown, I was standing alone among the crowd in the lobby of the convention auditorium and happened to overhear one man telling another about me. That last speaker was a liar and a thief and a fake. He stole every word he said right out of the story printed in the Big Book. In the rush of the crowd, I never saw him again or got a chance to correct him as to my character. In my original account of myself, I described my advent into AA as a happening brought about by some forces at work that I did not, and still do not, understand. I knew only that something happened to me that had never happened before. At one time I thought I had simply made a decision instead of a mere alcoholic promise, but I discarded that idea in favor of assigning the cause to the guiding hand of God, following by my own attempt to take the 12 steps to recovery. I ended by saying that whatever it was that brought me in, I have been in AA and I have been dry ever since. Very fortunately, I can still say so. I have often wondered why, precisely and exactly why, I got myself into the horrible alcoholic condition I was in when I joined our AA group. I am not sure that I've discovered this yet. Of course, the alcoholic has been variously and diversely defined, and it has been suggested that he simply does not know what he really wants, or always wants something that he doesn't have, and one of the humorous definitions of him illustrates this theory beautifully. An alcoholic, according to this definition, which I learned from a fine AA in Dallas, is a fellow who, when he is rich, wants to be poor, and when he is poor, wants to be rich. When he is single, he wants to be married. And when he is married, he wants to be single. When he goes to a wedding, he wants to be the bride. When he goes to the dinner table, he wants to make love. And when he goes to bed, he wants to eat. But let us be serious. It's now generally recognized that alcoholism is a symptom of some deep-seated maladjustment of one's personality and a symptom of some emotional conflict which one has been unable to solve. For example, in my case, perhaps not in yours, but at any rate in mine, I am a self-centered person, very egotistical and quite unreasonable in my demands upon other people, either actually or in my thoughts about them. I became so self-centered that I withdrew myself into a small circle, which got smaller and smaller until there was no one in it but myself. There was no real company there except my bottle. Next, I am emotionally immature, which I explain as being emotionally susceptible far beyond the normal, to resentment, envy, fear, anxiety, and grandiose daydreaming. Most alcoholics I know well are extremely affected by one or more, or all five of these. Then I tried hard to be a perfectionist and failed, of course, to advance to anything even remotely perfect. Finally, I was running away from something, perhaps from the reality of my situation. These self-centeredness, emotional immaturity, striving for perfection, and running away, I think are the chief personality traits which play havoc with the alcoholic's way of living. At least they seem to do so with me. And they are difficult traits to get rid of. I haven't got rid of mine yet, but I have improved. I have improved to the extent that I no longer have to take a drink or a pill to overcome them. Do not ever let anybody tell you that the AA program is easy to make. It isn't. That I'm unmanageable and have personality weaknesses or shortcomings which can lead me to disaster was to me most unreasonable. It was very difficult for me to realize that the 12 steps, which looked so naive at first, would succeed better than all well-thought-out methods. That I was powerless over anything was a bitter pill to swallow. It was hard for me to keep an open mind or do my part to let others live. It took a bottom of considerable crisis to reduce me to personal helplessness, so acute that I was ready for humility and surrender. And all of this was not attained by me by simply walking in to an AA meeting place. The AA program and procedure has worked well for me and for a tremendous number of other people. Why does it work when other things fail? We don't know. We really don't know. We have a lot of ideas. We know a great deal about drinking, its pleasures as well as its tragedies, its humorous side, the flimsy alibis, the hiding places, the degradation and helplessness of alcoholics' victims. Nevertheless, we really don't know precisely why AA works. But we do know that we get a lot of help from continued association with our groups. We get a lot of help from the observations we can make there. We benefit from associating with excessive drinkers who stay sober, and this seems to have some sort of favorable psychological effect, so much so that one is tempted to speculate that sobriety among alcoholics is contagious. We benefit from associating with excessive drinkers who stay sober, and this seems to have some sort of favorable psychological effect, so much so that one is tempted to speculate that sobriety among alcoholics is contagious. We benefit from association with excessive drinkers who do not stay sober, which seems to have favorable results too. We also sit around and take everybody else's inventory until the thought strikes us that we had better take our own. But above all, we learn to eliminate alcoholism by doing certain things which strike at the deep-seated causes of the malady. Rather than simply taking away or shutting off the whiskey, we learn to change our self-centeredness to stop running away from things we don't like and to remove or at least adjust our emotional shortcomings. We do these things by taking seriously and honestly our 12 steps, the nearest thing to a cure for alcoholism that anybody has yet discovered. We learn that these steps, over a sufficient period of time, will change our attitudes, change our thinking, change our personalities, if that be possible, change the inner man or woman into something it had not been before, and change our pattern of living into one we had not enjoyed in the past. We learn to do these things not just by memorizing the steps, though that is a good idea, but by attempting to live and act them each day of our lives. And eventually, often when we least expect it, we discover that as a result of all this, we are happy and contented and full of thanksgiving, something I once knew or thought I knew I could never be without drinking. Members of AA groups are full of miraculous changes like that. I am one of those fortunate ones who has had it happen to me. There are hundreds of thousands of others in AA today. And that story is signed J.P., Kent, Ohio. And now the story as it appears in the second edition of the big book, The Professor and the Paradox. Says he, "We AAs surrender to win, we give away to keep, we suffer to get well, and we die to live." I am in the public information business. I use that phrase or designation because if I say I'm a college professor, everybody always has a tendency to run the other way. And when they learn that I am a specialist in English, they have looks of horror for fear they are going to slip up and say ain't. I often wish I sold shoes or insurance or fixed automobiles or plumb pipes. I would have more friends. My story is not a great deal different from others, except in a few specific details. All the roads of alcoholism lead to the same place and condition. I suppose I have always been shy, sensitive, fearful, envious, and resentful, which in turn leads one to be arrogantly independent, a defiant personality. I believe I got a Ph.D. degree principally because I wanted to either outdo or defy everybody else. I have published a great deal of scholarly research, I think, for the same reason. Such determination, such striving for perfection, is undoubtedly an admirable and practical quality to have for a while, but when a person mixes such a quality with alcohol, that quality can eventually cut him almost to pieces. At least it did so to me. I began drinking as a social drinker in my early 20s. Drinking constituted no problem for me until well after I finished graduate school at the age of 30. But as the tensions and anxieties of my life began to mount and the setbacks from perfection began to increase, I finally slipped over the line between moderate drinking and alcoholism. No longer would I drink a few beers or a cocktail or two and let it go at that. No longer did I let months or even weeks go by without liquor. And when drinking, I entered what I now know was the dream world of alcoholic fantasy. Then, for about 5 years of progressively worse alcoholic drinking, of filling my life and home with more and more wreckage, it looked as if I were going to ride this toboggan of destruction to the bitter end. Maybe I didn't get as bad as some others. I must confess that I never went to teach one of my classes drunk or drinking, but I've been awfully hungover. My pattern was to be drunk at night, boil myself out to creep to work in the morning. Drunk the next night, boil myself out to work that morning. Drunk again, and the next night, boil myself out next morning. I may not have drunk as much whiskey as some, but there isn't anybody who's drunk any more Sal Hepatica than I have. Now there are all kinds of drunks, melancholy drunks, weeping drunks, traveling drunks, slap-happy and stupid drunks, and a number of other varieties. I was a self-aggrandizing and occasionally violent drunk. You wouldn't think a little fellow like me could do much damage, but when I'm drunk, I'm pure dynamite. I'm not going into any other details. The university can fire me yet. I came to believe, actually, that life was not worth living unless I could drink. I was utterly miserable and sometimes desperate, living always with a feeling of impending calamity. I knew something was bound to break loose. And to do away with such a fear, I would try a little more drinking, with the inevitable result, for by this time one drink would set up in me that irresistible urge to take another and another until I was down or hungover in trouble. In the hungover stage, I would vow never to touch another drop and then be drunk the next night. I knew at least there had to be some changes made. I tried to change the time and place and amount of my drinking. I tried to change my environment, my place of living, like most of us who at one time or another think that our trouble is geography rather than whiskey. I even entertained the idea of changing wives. I tried to change everything and everybody except myself, the only thing I could change. I did not know that it was physically impossible for me to drink moderately. I did not know that my body's drinking machinery had worn out and that the parts could not be replaced. I did not know that just one drink made it impossible for me to control my behavior and conduct and my future drinking. I did not know, in short, that I was powerless over alcohol. My family and my friends sensed or knew these things about me long before I did. Finally, as with most of us in AA, the crisis came. I realized I had a drinking problem which I had to be solved. My wife and a close friend tried to persuade me to contact the only member of Alcoholics Anonymous we knew of in town. This I refused to do. But I agreed that I would stop drinking altogether, maintaining stoutly that, sincerely, that I could and would solve this problem on my own. I would feel much better doing it that way, I insisted. I stayed sober for 2 entire weeks. Then I pitched a lulu of a terrible drunken affair in which I became violently insane. I also landed in the city jail. I don't know exactly what happened on this bender, but here are some things that did happen, which I was told about subsequently. First, the officers who had come to my house did not want to take me in, but I insisted. Also, I insisted that they wait in the living room when I went back to the bedroom and changed into my best and newest suit, with socks and tie to match, so that I would look nice in jail. I don't remember the ride downtown, but when I came to the jail corridor, I didn't like the looks of the little cage they were shoving me into, so I took issue about that with 3 officers and indulged in some fisticuffs with all 3 of them at once, each one of them twice my size and armed with a gun and a blackjack. Now, what kind of thinking and acting is that? If that isn't insanity or absurd grandiosity or some sort of mental illness, what is it? Because I yelled so loud and made so much noise, I ended up downstairs under the concrete in a place they call solitary. That's a fine place now, isn't it? For a college professor to spend the night? 2 days later, I was willing to try AA, which I had only vaguely heard of a few months before. I called at the home of a man who started the AA group in my town, and I went humbly with him to an AA meeting the following night. As I look back, something must have happened to me during those 2 days. Some forces must have been at work, which I do not understand. But on those 2 days between jail and AA, something happened to me that had never happened before. I repeat, I don't know what it was. Maybe I had made a decision, just a part of step 3. I had made lots of promises, but never a decision. Though it seems to me that I was at the time too confused and fogged up to make much of one. Maybe it was the guiding hand of God, or, as we Baptists say, the Holy Spirit. I like to think that it was just that, followed by my own attempt to take the 12 steps to recovery. Whatever it was, I have been in AA and I have been dry ever since. That was more than 6 years ago. AA does not function in a way which people normally expect it to. For example, instead of using our willpower, as everyone outside AA seems to think we do, we give up our wills to a higher power, place our lives in hands, invisible hands, stronger than ours. Another example, if 20 or 30 of us, real drunks, get away from home and meet in a club room downtown on Saturday night, the normal expectation is that all 30 of us will surely get roaring drunk. But it doesn't work out that way, does it? Or talking about whiskey and old drinking days, one would normally think, is sure to raise the thirst, but it doesn't work that way either, does it? Our program and procedures seem to be in many ways contrary to normal opinion. And so in connection with this idea, let me pass on what I consider the 4 paradoxes of how AA works. A paradox, you probably already know, is a statement which is seemingly self-contradictory, a statement which appears to be false, but which upon careful examination, in certain instances, proves to be true. 1. We surrender to win. On the face of it, surrendering certainly does not seem like winning, but it is in AA only after we have come to the end of our rope, hit a stone wall in some aspect of our lives beyond which we can go no further, only when we hit bottom in despair and surrender can we accomplish sobriety, which we could never accomplish before. We must, and we do, surrender in order to win. 2, we give away to keep. That seems absurd and untrue. How can you keep anything if you give it away? But in order to keep whatever it is we get in AA, we must go about giving it away to others, for no fees or rewards of any kind. When we cannot afford to give away what we have received so freely in AA, we had better get ready for our next drunk. It will happen every time. We've got to continue to give it away in order to keep it. Number three, we suffer to get well. There is no way to escape the terrible suffering of remorse and regret and shame and embarrassment which starts us on the road to getting well from our affliction. There is no new way to shake out a hangover. It's painful, and for us, necessarily so. I told this to a friend of mine as he sat weaving to and fro on the side of the bed, in terrible shape, about to die for some paraldehyde. I said, "Lost John." That's his nickname, Lost John. "You know you're going to have to do a certain amount of shaking sooner or later." Well, he said, "For God's sakes, let's make it later. We suffer to get well." We die to live, number four. That is a beautiful paradox straight out of the biblical idea of being born again, or losing one's life to find it. When we work at our 12 steps, the old life of guzzling and fuzzy thinking and all that goes with it gradually dies, and we acquire a different and better way of life. As our shortcomings are removed, one life of us dies and another life of us lives. We in AA die to live.